Hello and welcome to another edition of Inside the Burrow, the FAU podcast for and by fans. My name is Dan. I am joined as usual by Shane and Jack. And today we get to discuss an FAU victory. Real life, it happened, and we are totally stoked. And certainly it's great to be recapping a game that was that's a win. That's always much better than going over a loss.
Yeah, Dan, and looking forward to talking about Southern Miss and having a very special guest on our show, Alberto Leal. He's a really interesting guy, and we're going to be talking about FAU fandom and how we can just navigate as fans through this COVID crisis. But that being said, let's dive into this Charlotte W, baby.
I guess to get things started, certainly FAU, first game of the season, the first half really looked like it was our first half of the year. I think we'll dig a little bit deeper into play calling and to personnel, but I think overall FAU's 1-0 in the season, 1-0 in conference play, fought through a little bit of adversity there. I think that, you know, they stuck with Tronti, which was the right decision, which, like I said, I think we'll talk about that a little bit later on, but that's always great to see a conference win, and especially this, as we noted last show, this is the first time the home team won the game in this Charlotte FAU series. So definitely something to build on, lots of things to work on, but, you know, having that real game action was something to see. So Shane, you were there at the stadium. What are your initial thoughts?
You know, I was really calm that first half. And it's kind of what we expected. I had people texting me. I kind of saw Twitter was blowing up. There wasn't as many people in the stadium, so you actually had service. So I could kind of see what people were talking about. And there was just kind of this angst, and they were expecting the team that rolled out, that finished the game versus SMU, just to roll out onto that field. I thought the win in some ways was more satisfying than a lot of wins we had last year. To me, it was more satisfying, I'd say, than the Boca Bowl, just because everything that's kind of went on this offseason, the change of coach, the loss of quarterback, the tons of turnover on defense, right? I mean, if you look at that team, I mean, it's not even close to being as recognizable as the last team we saw out there, other than a few pieces. And the fact that they still kind of gritted out a victory against a school that went to a bowl game last year, against a coach that many, you know, say that will be coaching at, you know, at a Power 5 school within the next few years, okay? And, you know, that's fine. This team isn't last year's team. There is holes on this roster. And, you know, let's just be quite frank, Nick Tronti isn't Chris Robinson. I mean, I think we kind of saw that with, we don't have to get into tons of quarterback mechanics and release and arm strength and all that stuff, but he's not a four-star Elite 11 quarterback, okay? Chris Robinson had an NFL arm. You know, it doesn't mean Tronti's not a good quarterback, but, you know, that just, again, with some throws, it was just apparent. They made some adjustments at halftime, and they won the football game.
Shane, I'm relieved to hear you say that you weren't panicking at halftime, because I surely was. And I think it's funny that Shane was one that was confident in an FAU victory going into the game against Charlotte. I was one that
Jack, let me cut you off. Not so much confident, more, well, this is what we kind of expected, and this is what I told you all offseason. I think the whole offseason, people just had this idea that BJ Emmons, Larry McCam, and Malcolm Davidson were going to get 200 yards each, and we were going to win every game like last year. This team isn't as, I don't want to say not as talented, they're not as experienced, and, you know, there's obviously some drop-offs in some areas, and that's kind of what to be expected.
Well, I think yeah, I mean, we there was a lot of uncertainty going into the game, and we knew that, so we knew it would be bumpy, but what I mean is that I probably was more worried about Charlotte than I was worried about the FAU team itself falling on its face. Does that make sense? Because I made the big three. I said Will Healy, probably the best coach in Conference USA. Chris Reynolds, probably the best quarterback in Conference USA. Victor Tucker, probably the best wide receiver in Conference USA. But I was panicking, man. I was freaking out covering the game and seeing just how abysmal we were offensively. I couldn't understand the play calling. I couldn't understand why we weren't running the ball. Coach Taggart, he was the first one to say, my play calling was not good. And we're going to talk about this too. The absence of Malcolm Davidson in the first half was questionable. So that being said, I just opened up a can of worms. I mean, what do you guys think about him not seeing the field, one of our best running backs not seeing the field until the fourth quarter?
Well, let's address the first issue, and that's the play calling. Again, I didn't think the play calling was that bad at all. People want to criticize the fourth down call and the LaJonte Wester. They kind of ran some misdirection. I rewatched it again today. Two guys blocked the same guy, which left another guy open on that fourth down. If I can't remember who. If that block's picked up, it's a first down. You know, a lot of people I saw, well, why don't we just run the ball up the middle? We ran the ball on third and fourth down and one late in the game, and guys got blown off the ball and didn't convert that either. So I didn't mind that call. Again, how many times have we seen Willie Wright convert a third and short under Lane Kiffin on a jet sweep?
Why not give it to Willie Wright instead of a true freshman playing his first call?
Because obviously he's played well in camp and he's passed him. I mean, we don't talk on we're not out there, but I think there's that for a reason. Okay. I mean, he's out there and the other guy isn't. I think also Taggart did say his quarterback was panicking a little bit. I think he's protecting him a little bit with, okay, my play calling is off. Maybe they gave him too much too early, right? And they kind of maybe simplified it. Okay. It's genius.
Saying he was panicking, I think a lot of what was questionable to me was the amount of pass plays, I think, in the first half. And that, you know, again, that's play calling. Maybe they saw something that was worth it. I think one of the biggest takeaways for me was that we made adjustments. Like we saw what wasn't working, what might work, made the adjustments. And it was clear when we made the adjustments, we had success. It's hilarious, and it's classic, you know, it's classic football Twitter of the backup quarterback is the most popular player on the team, right? They're like, put Posey in, put any other quarterback in, and it's like, just let it run a half, you know, let it run a game. And I think Trotty handled that well, for sure.
Yeah, people said too much pass plays. You got to remember, BJ Emmons kind of got hurt. He got hurt on that second drive. I think he said he got hurt on the first drive and they put him back in. And I kind of rewatched the extended highlights today. And there was a play where he came off the field and he never came back in after that.
They said he had a stinger or something like
that. Yeah. He hurt his ankle, I guess. James Charles had the quote unquote stinger. As for what Jack said about not playing Malcolm Davidson, I kind of tend not to believe Willie Taggart just looked over his shoulder in the fourth quarter and said, oh, that guy that averaged 7 yards a carry and nearly 1,000 yards isn't on the bench. There probably is an element in the game where you have that many running backs, and sometimes you might lose track of who's getting reps. And it's tough to balance four guys. It literally is sometimes. You know what I mean? There was times where I'm like, where's Larry McCammon? You know what I mean? It's kind of tough.
Like, there are four legitimate running backs. I mean, like, at that point, it is – you can turn around and say, okay, who's next?
With all the quarantine guys. So if – I don't know. If a guy isn't playing, it could have been maybe he was stuck in his – maybe the player A was stuck in his dorm room for 14 days and he's not in the shape they want him in, right?
Didn't they say that was Amon Ross, that he
Amon Ross played pretty much – played the second most snaps on defense.
I do want to go back to the Tronte situation real quick, because that fourth quarter drive, though, is exactly why Tronte won the starting job, because he does have the most amount of experience. He can run the ball well. That was about to be a 99-yard touchdown drive, by the way, guys. Cool story with the fourth down. Yeah. I loved going for it in fourth down there. I really did. I know a lot of people were worried about it. I say that's your chance to ice the game right away. And the Charlotte offense hasn't been able to play well the entire half. Force them to make something to happen in the rain. And it ended up, thank God, it ended up being the right decision.
And just, Jim, you got to look at the scenarios of that decision, right? One, it's pouring rain, college kickers, right? So You're 1 yard away. Willie Taggart says, he said after the game, I want to show my guys I have faith in them. Showed he had faith in them.
Well, Shane, I mean, that's a good point where Charlotte's driving down the field. And I think, you know, we'll switch to a little bit of the defense now. This was kind of that what we've kind of fortunately grown to appreciate about the FAU defense is a timely stop when needed. Leighton McCarthy just had was a beast. That last series was exciting.
Every FAU fan though felt we were going to lose that. Like I saw it, I saw even on the play after Jalen Joyner got the sack, like Chris Reynolds was going to throw it up backwards and there was going to be a guy there. Cause we've seen that happen to us. There's still scars from the Charlie Partridge injury. We lost so many games just on free stuff like that. I thought, you know, obviously hats off to Levitt. I mean, that 3-4, Amon Ross playing kind of your nickel, weak side linebacker, being able to play in the box and cover people. I mean, that position fits him like a glove.
Dude was in quarantine for 28 days.
Yeah, I actually went back and listened to the podcast on the February signing day. And around like the 13:50 mark, Jack asked me two players that I think would make an impact this year, freshmen. And I said Evan Anderson and Chris Jones. Chris Jones had a sack and a half on 12 snaps. And Everest Anderson played 25 snaps, helping stop that run.
You called it, man. You absolutely did. And I mean, 12 snaps and 1.5 sacks, that production is insane. And good for Ross.
Was impressive.
Very impressive. And I got to give Levitt credit because I've been talking about how switching to the 3-4 worries the crap out of me and the defense played well. Doesn't mean that there weren't mistakes, but the thing that I liked the most was that the defense had each other's back. And the defense had the offense's back. They mentioned that at halftime how the defense was trying to get Tronti and the rest of the offense pumped up.
Yeah. And again, let's kind of wrapping up. This was the first game of the year after how many weeks of start and stop, of uncertainty. There was rust places. But again, it's like a win is a win. And against, you know, against a quality coach team, I'm not as high as on Will Healy as others. I think he's quite annoying with all the running and jumping up and down on the sideline. But yeah, right. a win is a win. We finally got to watch some meaningful football. And it was great to see. Also, you know, shout out Ken LaVeca. How many of us have missed those calls? Even Shane, you're at the game, and Jack, you may not be listening on the radio, but going back and watching the highlights, like, shout out Ken LaVeca, because that's what we need right now to get us through that. But we will we'll go ahead and tentatively talk about Southern Miss. There's some things that we can get into, certainly. There's nothing COVID related, but if you are unfamiliar, certainly if you're on the East Coast of Florida, you may not realize that there is another storm out there threatening the Gulf Coast and Southern Miss. Certainly, I'm not sure where the track is right now, but it's kind of the luck of our season where there's nothing COVID happening, but our game is in jeopardy due to Hurricane Delta. So FAU is scheduled right now to play Southern Miss. Shane, I know you were following a little bit more. There's some news about LSU and Mizzou about what their game was happening and when there might be a decision. Story.
So LSU Missouri has officially been moved to Missouri. It's supposed to be played in Baton Rouge, Hattiesburg, Mississippi, where we're supposed to play our game is about 150 miles away from Baton Rouge. You know, obviously these storms being Floridians, you know that the tracks can swath back and forth a couple hundred miles easily. And even if, you know, Southern Miss isn't getting the direct brunt, it's close enough where, you know, they'll definitely be feeling some effects and want to evacuate people even to the area and use hotels. So there's probably only two options. You can either play the game Thursday night, or Southern Miss can come down here and play the game. I think in a year of COVID, it makes things more difficult to make these changes, but there's no use of trying to find bye weeks and games later in the season. And FAU's already trying to do that with three other games. So just for Southern Miss, just come down here and just get the game.
Agreed. Yeah, who wouldn't want to come down to Paradise, 1.8 miles away from the beach, and hang out for a bit? Obviously, Southern Miss would rather have the home game, but we don't have a shared bye week with them. So it's either this or nothing. We're without another game. And we're already down a conference game, by the way, guys, because of Old Dominion. So that could be two conference games. I think the game should just be moved here to Boca, be played on Saturday. That's just what I think. All we know is that administrators at FAU have talked to their counterparts at Southern Miss. Both parties are talking to Conference USA. They're just discussions, but I agree with Shane. I think we're going to know something by Wednesday afternoon, probably by the time this podcast goes out, because that's just how the podcast world in 2020 college football works.
To just get into Southern Miss a little bit, right now, FAU's only 2.5-point favorites. I think that's more of just people not knowing what type of team FAU is. I'm going to be straight honest. Southern Miss is – they've had a lot of issues this year. For those who don't know, they've fired their head coach 1 week into the season.
Crazy.
Yeah. You know, after a tough loss to South Alabama, you know, their defense, you know, even before that, they had – quite a few starters opt out before the season. A couple guys on their defensive front that were impactful. They do bring back, you know, senior quarterback Jack Abraham, who's in a league that doesn't have great quarterbacks. He's arguably the best passer in the league. I mean, that's not saying much for Conference USA, but he's a guy who's streaky. And if he can get hot with the receivers, Tim Jones, who I don't know if he's playing, but Jason Brownlee, who's a JUCO receiver who FAU actually recruited last year, already has 17 catches for them. And another familiar name who's become kind of their best running back is Frank Gore Jr., who kind of, you know, had his first big game versus North Texas this week. But Southern Miss is not as good up front or on defense as Charlotte. So, you know, I hope we could take advantage of that. Now, I am a little worried. I don't think our corners were entirely outside of Vic Tucker were really challenged against. I thought Roman Mungin had his moments against Southern Miss. I mean, against Charlotte, but he also had his moments where he looked like a first-time starter. You know, kind of getting put on an island against Vic Tucker and getting beaten that last try.
Which is a
game-saving tackle, though. Game-saving tackle.
Look at it that way, exactly.
Yeah. So he had his moment. So, you know, it's a game where you don't want to let them get in a rhythm. They played North Texas, who is just – North Texas might be more of a disaster than they are. They were missing, like, 7 get starters with COVID, and Southern Miss beat them by 10 points. So, and North Texas has given up over 40 points to a Pop Warner team they played earlier this year. So, you know, it's definitely a team I think we're more talented than, but, you know, if – we come out and the offense is slow again and Jack Abraham gets in a rhythm with those receivers, it could be another interesting afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to talk about UNT real quick because remember when Steph Luttrell, their head coach, was going to become like the next big G5 to P5 head coach, big name? Well, that ship has sailed, man, because he's being exposed without Mason Fine. Jack Abraham, I'm happy, Shane, that you mentioned him because I think he's a good quarterback. Conference USA normally does have elite quarterbacks, really good throwers. This year isn't that year, but if you had to say the guys are in top tier in Conference USA, it's going to be Chris Reynolds and Jack Abraham. They're going to be the two guys who are going to be up there, especially when it comes to experience. So we get back-to-back weeks of decent quarterbacks, and then when you throw in Frank Gore Jr., who was committed to FAU, we were really hyped on him. It seemed like we backed off towards the end.
You know what? I'm going to point that out for those watching. Don't let the announcer say, okay, it's FAU wanted. Frank Gore was talented enough to play here. We have a lot of running backs.
Yeah.
That's the story. The new staff decided we had other, it appeared needs. We had other needs. It's
yeah.
Just, it was a numbers thing. No hard feelings, but Frank Gore is plenty talented. So
yeah. And that's something we talked about in great extent last year, especially in the signing day video. So, Southern Miss, they have the offense, but their defense, I mean, let's run it down their throat here.
It's a good week for Tronti to get in some passing rhythms.
Yeah, I agree. Hopefully it's not going to be a monsoon in Hattiesburg. The game can be moved here so he can work on some passing rhythm. But, you know, let's have Malcolm Davidson out there before the fourth quarter, preferably, and just dominate them on the run game. Quick injury update. Speaking of running backs, B.J. Emmons and James Charles listed as questionable. Charles, maybe. B.J. Emmons, I don't think we're going to see him on Saturday. I don't know. We'll see. But both listed as questionable. But Coach Taggart said it on Monday. If there's one place where we can lose guys right now, it's running back. Thank God we are as deep as we are. So with all of this in mind, with the USM game possibly being moved to Boca, I want to talk about the home stadium experience for a second. So we have a special guest joining us, Alberto Leal. He used to be an Owl Ranger, if you guys remember that. Owl Rangers were a big spirit group at the height of the FU basketball program, you know, with head coach Mike Jarvis, guard Raymond Taylor, Dennis Maven, so on and so forth. The borough would be packed every single night and the fans would be nuts. With the Charlotte game, I know with COVID it's hard, but it just didn't seem like college football without the crowd. So I want to ask Alberto a couple questions here. First, Alberto, you've seen FAU spirit at its peak, especially at the borough. Can you talk about that experience? Maybe what could be done to repeat that type of experience for current FAU students?
Sure. So I'll start by saying, yeah, there were a lot of seasons that I personally witnessed from the student section to now sitting with alumni when it comes to watching the football games. And, you know, obviously having to sit through a 1-11 season my junior year, Schnellenberger's last year to Pelini's first year, 3-9, and then the subsequent three-peat of 3-9 under Partridge. Very difficult times as an FAU fan and alum, very difficult to wear that on your sleeve with pride, but nonetheless, we did that. And, you know, starting 2017, you guys kind of know where things started from there and where we're at now. So, you know, as an alum, it's really been a proud moment for me to sort of see where we've started from the time I was a student to where we are now. I think the university as a whole, due to the football program in particular, their success, we have a lot more notoriety now as a national brand university. I think we've had more nationally televised games the past 3 years than we had my entire time as a student there. So, you know, I think there's something definitely to be said about that. And it does, going back to your original point, it does start with student engagement. When I was a student, even when we were 1-11, the main thing about the Owl Rangers were we were a spirit group. Okay, everything was about having pride in your university and having pride in calling yourself an Owl. And that's what we did. Whether it was 1-11 or 3-9, we showed up consistently, most of the time painted. And I can thank my wife for back in those days when she was my then girlfriend, painting our bodies red, white, and blue to honor FAU. So a lot of fun times there. And, you know, really just enjoying being a student, you know, understanding that you have a job to do as a student to make sure you get yourself through school, but also understanding the fact that you can have some fun along the way. And part of that fun is congregating with your fellow students and fellow Owls and being able to enjoy things like a football game, enjoy things like a basketball game, different student functions, whether it's just going out to dinner or something as simple as that. So, you know, it's a really fun time in a person's life when they're in their young 20s and they're meeting a lot of different people from all different types of backgrounds and just seeing how you're all able to come together as one over a university and in particular, in my case, basketball and football games and sort of making your student experience about that along with the academic work that you have to get through to make it successful.
So as someone that was at the Charlotte game last Saturday, and we just finished talking about this. What do you think that could be done to enhance the fan experience going forward while college football as a whole tries to navigate through this COVID pandemic?
Yeah, so for this year in particular, it's a little bit of a weird year, right? Because the football stadium sort of capping the attendance as to how many are allowed in. You know, on top of that, you have COVID concerns. South Florida at one point, not so much now, but at one point was a hot spot. So I think we all kind of understand the attendance problems as to this year in particular. But going back even last year, year before that, in 2017, when we were, you know, competing for conference titles year in and year out, winning conference titles two out of the last 3 years, I think a lot more needs to be done from the university standpoint as to fan engagement. We really need to market ourselves, I believe, as Palm Beach County's and Broward County's premier college football program, and understand that, you know, you have a big time college football program that belongs to an FBS conference in your own backyard, and they're having a lot of fun to watch as well. So, you know, there's something to be said about making sure that the university understands that. I think we're on the right track now with Dr. John Kelly and getting there. I think past administrations and presidents and leadership within the university at times had difficulty understanding that concept, and you know, understandably, there was more so of a focus on the academic sort of side of things, which rightfully so there should be, but also understanding that as you grow your athletics program and really be that first introduction to the average American household to your university in the form of football, there's a lot of value in that too. So I think now we're starting to get that from a leadership standpoint from the university administration. And I do believe that from here, this point on, really, it should continue this way. But what I would like to see is just more of a, I guess you could call it a grassroots effort from the university to get out there. You know, I know the coaches have done a good job when they can speaking out to the Greek communities to get them out to games. But again, for students, it's really just about coming out, having fun, understanding that this is your opportunity to congregate, and this is your opportunity to make your university experience worthwhile.
Is that I understand where you're coming from and how that grassroots effort, it helps. And we can see that firsthand ourselves. And us at the Owl's Nest, we want to support that effort when it comes to the coaches talking to not just the Greek life students, though, but all the students. Remember when Willie Taggart got hired, he said that he can't wait to get into the dorm rooms and talk to students and have them take pride in the football team. And I think COVID's kind of taken that away, and that's a bit of a shame, you know? So, you know, before we left you go, having gone to the Charlotte game, what do you think? How do you think the team did, and how do you think they'll do this Saturday, hopefully, if we ended up playing Southern Miss?
Yeah, so, you know, it's sort of an interesting year kind of going back to this COVID situation. Obviously, we've had four games canceled, but I think the team really looked good. I think obviously that first half was a little difficult. It was more of a feeling out process, not just of Charlotte, but also of ourselves as a team and what we can do good and kind of figuring out what our strengths were as the game went along. But I think things got better, especially in that third quarter. We ran the ball really well. We got back to that. I kind of felt like we abandoned that a little bit in the first half, but we got back to that. Trani showed that he's got an arm. He's got a Big Ten caliber arm as he was in Indiana previously before coming here. So he showed that he could still play the quarterback position and play it well. He's not just a running quarterback. But the defense as well. I think the defense showed a lot of heart. The defense showed a lot of toughness in terms of staying your ground, not getting too down on themselves, and creating turnovers when necessary. I mean, that fumble by McCarthy there in the third quarter was huge. And I think that was very reminiscent of that 2017-2019 conference title team where we were a very opportunistic defense. And I think if that continues, we got a shot. The good thing about this specific year is it seems like all the other Conference USA teams are kind of in the same boat that we are in terms of trying to feel each other out. I mean, you know, Ole Miss is going through a coaching change right now. So, you know, all that needs to be considered. I think we're still kind of a sneaky pick to come in and win the conference. I think that game against Marshall in Huntington is kind of what we should have circled on the calendar as to whether or not the barometer is there for us to truly compete. But I think we're right there. I think we have the talent. We have the athletes. And like I said, I mean, this is a team that won the conference 2 out of the last 3 years. That talent just doesn't go away overnight, although we've had some massive losses over the offseason. But, you know, I'm confident. I think Willie's going to right the ship. I think the team's just going to get better as the year goes along, as the coaching staff gets to know the players. The players get to know each other as well.
Thank you so much for being on the show with us. And before we let you go, obviously you're an FAU grad, went down this path. Now you are a practicing attorney. We kind of wanted to give you the chance to, I guess, share a little bit about what you're doing now and what you potentially can offer other FAU grads.
Yeah, Dan, thanks for asking that. So I'm the sole owner and operator of the Layout Law Firm PA. We're primarily a virtually based law firm in Westlake Worth. Primarily, we service clients in the areas of family law, meaning modification, custody, divorce, or paternity, as well as auto accidents and other civil matters. So if an FAU grad or other client at large has any questions, they can feel free to reach me at 561-237-2740. Obviously, I give all free consultations. We pride ourselves on offering affordable and accessible legal representation. Also, I can be reached at Twitter or email, Twitter being at Leal Law, LEALLAW, and Al at thelealfirm.com. If you would like any other additional information, you can certainly check out our AVO page, which is AVVO.com. Search our firm in there, which has a 5-star rating. And we got a couple Google reviews as well, 5-star ratings. So it's not just coming from me. It's coming from our clients as well, because we do great work. And that's what we strive to do every day. And, of course, put the university up there on the mantle to show that, you know what, FAU grads got talent too. And we're able to make differences in this community too. And we're happy to do it.
And as a member of the Paradise Club, you know, you put your money where your mouth is. That's for sure, Alberto.
That's right. So with the Paradise Club, we're happy to obviously make annual donations and really help our student athletes out in terms of tuition, cost of living, room and board, things of that nature. It's good knowing that money that we donate goes directly to them. Earlier during this pandemic, FAU had a student emergency release fund as well. We made a sizable donation to that as well, just trying to help out our former Owls. And something that you guys had referenced on your site earlier was, and what's probably our most proud accomplishment this time, is the establishment of the Layout Scholars Program at Palm Beach State College, which I went to for a short time before coming to FAU. And that we've been able to put 4 students through college at this point since 2018, and they've all graduated debt-free at this time. So that's what we're really excited about. We just want to keep it going, keep the university up there, and just represent and put on for FAU and our Owls.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Thank you so much for doing that. We appreciate that. And that's what being an FAU Owl is all about, is being here for the community. That's something that we have here at this university, at this program, that I feel like doesn't really exist at others. So thanks again. Hey, are we winning this weekend?
You know, I'm not quite a betting man, Jack, but if I had to put my money where my mouth is, I would say FAU top Southern Miss. I'm going to say 31-14. Woo, we're going to impress. I'm telling you, we got talent, man. People sleeping on this team. Don't sleep too hard, though. We got some talent, especially in that backfield.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks so much for coming on, Alberto. We appreciate it.
Now, thank you, guys, and keep doing what you're doing. Big fan of the show. Go Owls.
Yeah. So hopefully if you saw this, we are going to be playing Southern Miss someplace. So definitely make sure to stay tuned to FAUOwlsNest.com. Again, we thank you for joining the show. We always appreciate everything. Make sure you always check us out on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, FAUOwlsNest.com, really any place that you can get your podcast. So again, for Jack and Shane, we really appreciate you being with us, and we will see you next week. Go Owls.